And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, new paradigms for a new world, and a whole new vocabulary that I'm just creating as we go here on the program that brings you choices and knowledge of those choices. Choices, what language shall I speak today that I don't even understand? We also are bringing you new paradigms, and we bring you the podcasts, the radio programs on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. Podcasts are on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher. I've got some news, or I received some news regarding iTunes that I don't fully understand, and so I'm not going to worry about it. And we've got a PayPal account if you'd like to support us financially. We could use all the help we can get. So PayPal, Patreon, those are two places that you can contribute, and thank you for those who have. Thank you for those who will. And we will take energetic support as well. I think you're going to enjoy today's program. I know I am. It's going to be filled with, probably lots of laughter. Probably lots of fun. And I would venture, and I hope that I'm accurate in this, there's going to be some stuttering on this program. And it's going to be, I don't know that I want to say intentional, but it's going to be there. Are we going to edit? Are you kidding me? Our guest is going to share with us her experience as she has grown up and become a comedian who does stand-up, who does keynote speaking in public, of all places, and yet she allows herself the freedom to speak in the speech pattern that she has, and that is with a stutter. She's also written, I think, a really fun book. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think it'll be inspiring as well as entertaining. Stutterer Interrupted, the comedian who almost didn't happen. And her name is Nina G. And I thank you so much for joining us on the program today. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. God, the first word, it is already a stutter. You are so lucky.
It's perfect.
So, yes, there's going to be lots of stuttering for this program. And also, in addition to that, lots of waiting as well. So I always ask people to wait for all of my brilliant ideas.
Absolutely. My wife is not a stutterer, but she is dyslexic. She has had trouble reading. And there have been people in her life, in her past, who, when she was reading aloud, which she hated doing, like you would not believe, and they would try to finish the word she was trying to figure out. And then I met her, and she began to allow me to listen to her read and so forth. I let her struggle through it, because if I didn't, she would never get to the place where she would understand the words that she was reading. We were actually watching a movie. By the way, we don't watch movies with subtitles because they go by too fast. I have trouble reading them because of my visual impairment, or my low vision, if you will, plus the fact they go by too fast. They don't leave them up long enough. You know, fortunately, it's on demand, so I can hit the pause button a lot, right? But she will sit there and she'll read the, like at the end of a movie, they'll give lots of description maybe about what happened at the end and so did this and that and the other thing. And I'll pause it then and then she'll read that. And sometimes she'll hit a word and it'll be difficult, but I just sit there and I wait. And that's kind of what happens with you and people in speaking in public situations, where you get stuck, if you will, or caught in a repetitive phrase, kind of thing. We used to do that. We used to be able to create that kind of stuff in our editing software here at work, and so forth, where we wanted that for effect. You're not doing it for effect.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Max Headroom kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
If you remember him from the 1980s.
Yes, I'm almost 60, so yes, I do remember him.
Yeah.
You're awfully young. I'm surprised you even know about him, but that's good.
I am almost 50, so hey! I am 46. I don't want to age myself too fast, but no, 46, so absolutely. I remember him well.
Well, first of all, I congratulate you on the book. I'm still, mine is available, but it's not in the same format as yours as of yet. It's only a PDF, but at least it's something. Mm-hmm. But also congratulations, and there's a part of me that wants to say congratulations to this, but at the same time, I'm sitting here going, she basically just adapted. That's all she did. That's what we do as human beings when we're faced with challenges. We adapt to those circumstances, and then we move forward. And you've overcome the stigma, but not the what is termed a disability. And I will throw out a phrase that I coined many years ago when I was legally blind: your perceived limitation. Perceived limitation. Mm-hmm. Because you're doing all this other stuff that most stutterers would be absolutely, they would die first.
Well, and let's also include everybody, because I think stand-up comedy and public speaking is one of the biggest fears people have. So it's just not people who stutter, but it's pretty much the entire world.
Sure. So my first question is, this was with you from birth, correct?
Okay. So what was with me from birth was, okay, so when I was 2.5, when I first started to talk, I didn't talk in the typical ways most kids talk. When I wanted chicken, I would make this sound. And for cheese, I do. And so I was chirping, and my parents were like, maybe chirping isn't normal. And so they brought me to the doctor, and the doctor then referred me to Oakland Children's Hospital, where I started seeing a speech therapist whose name was Elaine, and she's actually still a friend of mine. So Elaine is still part of my life after so many years. And what that was an articulation issue. And that articulation issue was because I have auditory learning disabilities. So for me, my auditory processing isn't like everybody else's. And part of that is auditory discrimination. And the best way that I have to explain that is Charlie Brown's teacher. And do you remember how Charlie Brown's teacher talked?
Wah, 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 wah.
Exactly. Yes. And so that wah, 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 like I could, like people were talking, but my brain was hearing it, but it wasn't understanding it. And so I was saying what I heard. And what that was also a very early, early sign of a language-based learning disability, which eventually turned into dyslexia. And dyslexia, I mean, it's defined in so many ways, but it's more than just like seeing B's and P's and Q's and all that backwards. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more. And so for me, when I hit the third grade, which is that time when you start to read to learn instead of learning to read. So it's a key part. And that's when my problems in school became more apparent because of the language-based LD. So yes, it was there since birth, but it didn't manifest until then. And the stutter didn't manifest until I was like 7 or 8. And so the stutter, it's likely to be a gene, because I have first cousins who stutter, and I have, and that's on my dad's side. And on my mom's side, I had a great uncle who stuttered. So genetically, I was predisposed. And it's also very common for girls specifically who have learning disabilities to keep their stutter into adulthood. So that's another aspect there. So that's, Yeah, I was born with it, but it didn't pop out until later.
And it sounds to me like it was sort of a progressive thing, but that isn't always the case. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's boom, it's just there. And now you made reference to an auditory issue. Is that pretty typical, or as there are just as many different forms of, I'll call it legal blindness, and visual impairments, there are different forms of stuttering or, I don't want to say, well, causes, yes, but you see what you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know. It's so complex that it's hard to really categorize it. And especially what I always say is that, you know, if you look at any type of disabilities, you look at any kind of psychiatric disabilities, you look at the autism spectrum, we're trying to label and to construct a way to understand something. So all of these ways that we understand it are man-made. And I specifically use the gender term man-made because traditionally they have been. Something like ADHD is man-made because it's been based on the male perception of these things. And in girls and women, ADHD shows up in a very different way. So we apply all these constructs to things that make sense to a certain extent, but sometimes it doesn't always include everything. And so going back to your question, the auditory thing is very, it's not super common, but it can be an aspect to dyslexia. And it's not at all an aspect to stuttering. So I have a language-based learning disability, and I also stutter. And those are two things. It would be like if you are legally blind and you stutter. They are not connected, although for me, they're also on the same side of the brain, so they could be connected somehow, but they are distinguished in those ways.
And it is, I would say, a frustration for some
mm-hmm.
to listen to, let alone be around somebody who stutters.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really unfortunate because James Redfield, for example, if you've read him, he talks about how we have messages for one another, which I think is pretty cool, mm. and that we need to connect with one another to get those messages. Because if we don't, we are missing out on a great opportunity,
yeah.
And so forth. And so when we cut ourselves off from people who have, and I'm going to say, quote unquote, disabilities, then we are cutting ourselves off from an opportunity for ourselves to grow. And then we deny the other person the opportunity to gather bits and pieces from that other person in order to continue to build our puzzle, if you will, or as one of my guests says, our mosaic. And that's mm-hmm. really unfortunate, too. It's like, okay, well, now I'm going to have to wait until I get to mile marker 762, and you're at 3, and before I'll get another chance to get that information, you know.
And what I really like about that is that I think that can be personal and people just not waiting for someone to say something or just ordering in a restaurant or just asking, you know, like there was somebody at Starbucks who stutters, who was mocked. And there is that personal piece. There is that everyday functioning piece. But then there is that piece that you're just not... People just don't communicate with people in that dyad of one-on-one, but there is the social aspect. And I think what is super problematic is that people with disabilities have been cut off from that social aspect in terms of the media, in terms of access to the theater, in terms of so many things where our voices are not heard because people are like there was actually a law that started in San Francisco and went everywhere saying that disabled people should not be in the street. And this was like in the 1800s. It was called the Ugly Laws, where it was illegal to be out and about if you are disabled. And of course, we don't have that now. But what kinds of voices, what kinds of images get out into the popular media world? It is not female voices who stutter. If it is a stuttering voice, it's almost always a guy. And oftentimes it is one type of guy who is a white guy. And so you see that a lot among the images of people with disabilities.
Well, now, in interviewing people dealing with the differences that we have amongst ourselves as individuals, many people who were watching television as kids growing up, and I hear this a lot from some celebrities and just some people in public life who say, well, I didn't see nobody on TV that looked like me, so I couldn't really relate. And I would probably be considered Caucasian. However, my skin is rather dark. I am much darker than my wife. I've done the DNA test, so I've got Native American blood in my, you know, in me from the North, Central, and South Americas, along with European. I'm also 1% Jewish, European Jewish, Irish, and so on and so on and so on. And I have to tell you that as a blind person who could see the TV, I could see well enough to watch television.
Yeah.
That question never went through my mind. How come I don't see people that look like me or who are disabled mm-hmm. like me or visually? It's like, why would I don't know about you. I mean, you're a white girl, or at least from what I can tell. And
yes,
I would venture you're watching television. You didn't have that question as far as white girls are concerned, because they're all over the place. Stuttering, whole
yes.
other thing, as you just said, mostly male, predominantly a male stutterer as opposed to female stutterer. What about that in terms of your growing up? Did that even cross your mind in terms of those quote unquote role models, whether it be television, movies, sports, etc.?
Yeah. Okay. So I think that you don't know what you don't have until you have a glimpse of it. And you're like, oh my God, why didn't I have this earlier? And for me, so growing up, of course, as a person who stutters, there was always Porky Pig.
and
what I always say is that, you know, like a cartoon pig who doesn't wear pants probably isn't what most girls growing up want to appeal to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then because it was the 80s, there was Mel Tillis, who, like, I was never into country. I was always more into rap. And so that wasn't my thing. Although, yeah, it is great. He's there. But, like, I never related to him like that.
Mm-hmm.
Since I grew up in Alameda, which is right next to Oakland, my dad wasn't hardcore. It's not like he was in the black hole or anything. But he was a pretty good Raiders fan back in the day, and so I knew about Lester Hayes, who was the cornerback for the Raiders in the mid 80s, and he had a significant interview where he significantly stuttered, and that was the first time that I really saw a non-cartoon pig stutter like that. And I remember going to school the next day thinking, like, people are going to be making fun of him, and, like, no one cared. He played a good game, and that was it. But that was the first time that really was there. But again, I didn't like football. I couldn't really, you know, I didn't really care. But I had always loved comedy my entire life. Like, I had stuffed animals named after Gilda Radner. I had a sock puppet. Actually, I'm looking at it right here. It is a sock puppet that I made when I was in second grade. And I named it Edith Ann after Lily Tomlin, and now it is signed. My sock puppet is signed by Lily Tomlin because wonderful. The sock puppet and Lily Tomlin met. It's wonderful. Anyway,
that's cool.
So I've always loved comedy. And when I was in high school, I just happened upon the show on a New York syndicated channel on Channel 9, it was called. And it was on Saturday nights at 11 o'clock, and it was Howard Stern. And on Howard Stern, there was a guy on there, Stuttering John, who would ask these very embarrassing questions of movie stars. And they would get very, like, upset both about his speech and look at him funny about his speech, but also he's asking, like, awful things. So there was that too. And it was the first time that I really felt I saw any aspect of my stuttering life on TV or in the movies. So that was really key thing for me, because he was someone who stuttered, who had stuttered openly. And it was a paradigm shift for me that you could stutter, because before that, I thought you had to be fluent all the time. And he was the first example of someone that I saw who embraced his disfluency, as did everyone else around him, and they embraced it so much that they made fun of it. But even being made fun of, it was part of the inclusion of the Howard Stern show.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I'm not sure whether I'm some kind of anomaly to the whole thing or not, but it's just been interesting to observe this whole situation, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to dealing with these challenges that we face. That's what I kind of refer mm-hmm. to them, rather than disabilities per se. Mm-hmm. Not because disabilities is a bad word or a wrong word. I'm not trying to be politically correct, but a disability mm-hmm. is a challenge. And we as human beings, it has been sort of noted that when we are faced with certain challenges, we adapt. And I was just looking up a quote here. And a neighbor of mine, whose name is Dana, he lived next door to us. He and his family, they were a family of 9 kids. And our family living right next door was a family of 6 kids. And fully functioning, compatible mother and father. You know, there was no divorce in the process. Now, the interesting dichotomy that we as kids did not understand then, nor does it matter today, was that they were Mormons and we were Catholics. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a teaching in the Mormon church that the Catholic church is the whore of Babylon, according to the book of Revelations. Well, we didn't care. But,
and it's not.
No, I know. No, it's not. No, I'm just saying that that's what was taught back then. But Dana said something to his brother when he found out that I had reconnected with his brother Brent. He sent a text and he says he was referring to a photograph that he was looking at. But he made a comment about me that I didn't even know until here I am, 59 years old, and I get this text from his brother, Dana. I only remember Richard, Michael, who is my brother, and of course, referred to my sister. He also says that I have memories of them, and if you have a way of letting Richard know, tell him that by growing up with him, I've never looked at people with disabilities as being disabled. Anyone who had a vision challenge like him, but would still play chess and football and build forts in the backyard in the oleanders, which is where we used to build them, in the oleander bushes in my father's backyard, and dig underground forts, showed that having a disability is no reason to not do what you want to do. I have to say that really touched me when I read that, and I bring that up now because when you're just doing what you're doing, and by the way, I've watched some of your stand-up online, And people just love it. Now, are you familiar with some of these comedians that are sort of coming out of the woodwork now with their respective challenges? There's one kid who has Tourette's, one gentleman who has Tourette's.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this wonderful, wonderful routine that he does. Just had me in stitches. And he really wasn't making fun of himself as much as he was seeing the humorous side of what other people might see in him.
Yes.
How do you approach that?
And so, I think, there's so much here I want to talk about. And so the first thing is that what your friend did is like you changed his attitude just by being peers. And what the research on disability attitudes say is that attitudes change when it's a peer interaction. And that's why I also think stand-up comedy, especially in the form that I do it and the form that the different, I wasn't prepared. I know the guy's name. It's a guy who has Tourette's. He just won AGT.
Yeah.
And he's great. Samuel.
Yeah.
Samuel Crow, something like that.
Yeah.
And he's awesome. And I've worked with him. And I think what distinguishes him and me and many other people who are coming out of the disability culture, because one thing is that the challenges that we face are like the everyday things. And a lot of times those are other people's attitudes. But disability can be an identity. It's like, I'm Italian American. I was raised Catholic and I'm disabled with a big D, meaning that I am part of a community of activists. I am part of a community of people who share a common experience. And disabled comics who come out of that don't necessarily make fun of their own disabilities. And it is a shift in how to think about it, where the disabled person isn't the joke. The joke is a society that isn't always accessible, that isn't always polite and do things the way that we would like them to.
I have to say that my first wife was totally blind. She was blind from birth due to an incubator problem back in the 60s where she was born premature. So they put her in an incubator. And of course, the challenge was getting the oxygen level right. Too much and you burn the eye, burn the retina of the eye. Too little and you have brain damage. And of course, she had the former. But for as long as I knew her, up to about 25 years ago, she had a chip on her shoulder because she was upset that the sighted world refused to make the necessary changes she thought should be made for the visually impaired world, for the blind world. It was like a rock and a hard place from the standpoint I want to support her and I want to sit there and say I get what you're saying. However, the world is a sighted world and you need to let go of the chip and adapt, if you will. How is that possible for a stutterer? Because the rest of the world does stutter, but it isn't something that is, shall we say, would you say chronic?
It's more of like it's just something everybody does. And so people have a hard time distinguishing when you are a person who stutters or you're a stutterer, because they're like, oh, I do that sometimes. Okay, what's your name? If you don't stutter on your name, then you really don't stutter.
Yeah.
Because, and not that all of us stutter on our name, but a lot of us do.
Sure.
And it's when you stutter, there are all kinds of feelings that come along with that. And there's a psychologist, Joseph Sheehan, who said that the feelings that a person who stutters has, it's his metaphor says specifically says that stuttering is like an iceberg. What you all see are the blocks or the repetitions, but beneath the waterline is the bigger part of that. And that includes shame, denial, guilt, anxiety, fear, hopelessness, and isolation. And his whole thing was that you had those things and you worked to get rid of those things. And so that all you see is the stutter. But I really feel that you need to shift how you think about your stuttering. And one example could be, instead of denial, acceptance, instead of shame, pride, instead of isolation, community. And for me, finding a community of people who stutter has been a key part of my healing, of my acceptance, of interacting in the world, so that when I have a weird interaction, like I know there's going to be weird interactions sometimes, and how do I embrace those instead of having those eat me up, and embrace in a way that is easier as a comic than before, when I was like, oh, what do I do with this weird interaction I had? And so, you know, it's the chip, because yeah, I got a chip on my shoulder sometimes, but I also know that I need to help people understand what this process is. Yeah. And if they don't have those opportunities to interact, then it's not going to change how they look at this.
Well, you know, there were a couple things that came to mind. Number one was, I can only imagine someone coming up to you one day and saying, you know, Nina, have you considered going to Stutterers Anonymous? Okay. Doing the 12 steps to stop stuttering and get a sponsor. The other thing that I wonder about, too, is... where you are on that spectrum that you just described. I know that you use your comedy as an outlet and so forth, but what about you when you're up there performing or in conversation with people like me, you know, or face-to-face with other folks? Where are your... I don't like using the word negative emotions, because all of our emotions are important, but we tend to get stuck in them. So those ones that you listed from this doctor, where are you on that spectrum? Say 1 to 10, 1 being I am up to my eyeballs in it, and 10 is I got none of them. I'm free as a bird.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially as an author, and especially as somebody who does professional speaking, I think people are like, oh, I have totally transformed my iceberg, where I have acceptance, pride, kindness, comfort, courage, hope, community. That is not it, because I think we have glimpses of each of these things. Because for me, I feel like a lot of the shame that I've learned in my life, and this is shame because I went to Catholic school. You want to talk Catholic stuff?
Oh, yeah. I went to Catholic school. Great. Kindergarten and first grade Catholic school.
Well, yeah. Well, and then your parents got smart. Huh?
Then sent us to public school.
Or maybe you were just so bad that they're like,
get him out of here.
Get this kid into public.
That's right. Well, let me... by the way, one other thing I was just thinking of, too, that came to mind, that if you were to go to a stutterer's meeting, not a Stutterers Anonymous, but a stutterer's meeting, and you say, yeah, and it's only going to be a 30-minute meeting, it'd probably be more like 45 minutes to an hour.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, you think because it is the stutter, but when people who stutter have the opportunity to speak freely and without interruption, we will talk all night long. And there is a conference every year for people who stutter. It's called the National Stuttering Association. Mm-hmm. And then there's other ones too in Canada and in India, and there's ones for kids, all kinds of things. But Like, I'll be up until 5 a.m. I cannot sleep. I am down in the lobby. I am talking to people all night long. Because we can. Yeah, it's freedom. It's the utopia that we always wanted. And we didn't know we wanted it until we got it.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to have these voices out there so that we know there is an alternative to, you know, like I was taught at a certain point that I should talk like this to prolong my words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, that's not working for me. So next.
The other thought that I wanted to share with you, you know, a lot of folks, when they text or when they write, they misspell. Well, mm-hmm. when I talk, I misspell words, but you'll never know it. You'll never know it. You know, I could put a silent,
never know.
I could put a silent K on who, but you'll never know, or multiple silent E's. Okay. So I have my own unique, we'll call it disability in that regard. We're talking with Nina G.
Pretty cool.
We're talking with Nina G, a stutterer interrupted. The comedian who almost didn't happen. We're going to come back and talk more with her about her stand-up and the work that she is doing around the country, if not around the world. We hope you'll stay with us here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm serious. You go away and you're going to miss a lot.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Nina G. She's written a book called Stutterer Interrupted. She's a comedian who almost didn't happen. And I would say that who would have thunk that a woman who stutters on stage, I mean, my gosh, a 2-minute joke could take 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. And yet you managed to, again, as we've talked about other comedians, male and female, who are now using their challenge in the comedy, and they're not being self-deprecating. And I have to say, that is the one thing that would turn me off to a comedian more than anything else, is that they constantly would put themselves down. I get that enough from people who don't have quote-unquote disabilities that are obvious, like stuttering, blindness, deafness, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about your comedy? You're not going to sit there and just, you're not going to bash yourself. That's not what you do.
You know, I will make fun of myself in terms of, like, I don't know, like, you are seeing me right now, but I'm not seeing you. But, you know, I have a good size Italian nose, and my joke, which really isn't a joke, this is just me reporting on some of my childhood. But once I told my mom when I was a teenager, I was like, I think I have a big nose. And she said, you don't have a big nose. You have a small Italian nose. I was like, not really compliment, mom. Like I will talk about that, but I will not make fun of my stuttering.
Right.
I will make fun of other people's reaction to it, but I won't make fun of my stuttering. And that's because just like you said, like, been there, done that. It's been done in movies. It's been done in third grade when I was in third grade. It's overplayed. And I really believe that comedy should be adding something new instead of just rehashing what's already been done.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I actually created a joke for myself that is not self-deprecating. I am a native Phoenician. I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, born in 1960. And I'll be 60 next year as of this recording. And I was also born legally blind. Had lots of surgeries and this and that and the other thing. So I came up with this joke. I say, you realize that the fact that I was born in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm also legally blind, you know what that makes me, don't you? Makes me a Phoenician blind. Now, the funny thing about that is, of course, nowadays, who knows what a Venetian blind is? And if they even came from,
no, I know.
From Venetia. But anyway, that's it's just obviously a play on words. And that's one thing. I actually, when I was a paperboy in my high school days, I would have to get dressed in the dark. But I could actually tell what color clothes I was putting on. Not that it mattered, because you're delivering the morning paper before sunrise. Who's going to see you, really? But I could tell what color that I was putting on. I can work my way through a dark house like where we live now. I mean, I know it so well. I still put my hands out. I'm going to tell you, I still put my hands out because I don't want to make a mistake and run into a wall. But it's something that I've always done. It's just who I am. And then I also have this condition. I don't know how they classify it. It's called, I believe I have the correct pronunciation, kinesthesia. And of course, what that is
okay.
I see letters and numbers as colors or in colors and so forth. I mean, we all have these wonderful little traits and characteristics and ways in which we see the world. Is your objective in your comedy to help people, even though, unless they were actually able to walk in your shoes for a mile, to get an understanding at least, even if it's minimal, of what it's like to be you as a stutterer? Because if you didn't have stuttering, if you didn't stutter and you weren't a comedian, or would you still be a comedian if you didn't stutter?
Well, yeah, I think that I would be a comedian if I didn't stutter. I mean, I think it'd be a totally different act because I'd be a whole other person. But my love for comedy is older than how many years I've been stuttering, by like two years. So I think that comedy would have always been with me. But I think part of that is how we use humor as a way to cope in the world, and how we own our own stuff. And by stuff, it could be a disability. It could be some gender fluidity that we have. It could be any number of things. It could be poverty. When you can make jokes around that thing, it sometimes takes the piss out of it. It diffuses it so that it doesn't have so much power. And for me personally, I mean, I tell dirty jokes in dive bars, and that to me is an art form. But it also, hopefully I'm changing people's perspective on what a disability is and able to shift how they think about that. And then when I go for professional speaking, or when I have an online presence, or when people read my book, that they start to construct an understanding of disability in a different way. And again, much like your friend that you changed his attitudes, I think that we can change those attitudes in dive bars, in reading a book, in having a segment on a podcast. And it's going to take little bits at a time, but the more that we're out there and the more that we tell our stories, the more people can personalize them and integrate them into their own understanding of what a disability means and is, and start to shift the stigma around it.
And I've got a multi-layered question here. It's a simple question, but it asks for sort of a multi-layered answer. You're a stutterer. You're a woman. What are your thoughts, A, about the movements that have cropped up over the last couple, 3 years, in specific, the Me Too movement? And also, what are your thoughts about what I have to say were the most disgusting display of I don't even know what word to put to this, by what who the gentleman who became the leader of the free world, about a gentleman who had a disability. Can you
talk to us? Okay. So what I imagine you talking about on that last thing was that there was a presidential candidate
whose name shall be nameless,
who started his campaign making fun of somebody with a disability who was a reporter and kind of doing this like classical bully move. Anybody with a disability has seen it on the playground where it's like that. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of memes out there that report that, or that they have that it's that image. And this was very early on in the campaign. And something that I did, because when I saw that, I was like, oh my God. And the thing is, it's like, many candidates don't understand disability. And the thing is, they need to engage with us and they need to hear us. And so one of the things that I did was I started a hashtag under the hashtag Crippled America, because Crippled America was the name of that specific candidate's book. And the occupation of Crippled America was to educate candidates. Maybe it was this one, maybe it's other ones, because they all need education, mm-hmm. on what the disabled community needs from their politicians. And it got fairly big. It was featured in some news things, some BuzzFeed and whatever it was back then. You know, the media changes constantly. But there were a lot of people who really wanted to be heard in terms of their issues and what politicians need to be looking at, because they don't get our issues a lot of times, and it's still happening.
Yeah. And as far as the Me Too movement is concerned and women stepping up and really taking, I want to say taking back their power in that respect, the differentiation between the Me Too movement on the, you know, as observed by the general public, as opposed to the way I observe it, is that a lot of people think that the women's movements in this respect are trying to take control. They're trying to take over, so to speak, because they're so angry. They're so upset, which, you know, they have every, you know, women have every right to be, because men have been deplorable, pardon me for using that word, for centuries. Absolutely deplorable. And I'm one of them, folks. But I'm hopefully, you know, have grown in my aging, as it were. But the fact of the matter is, from my observation, it isn't about taking control. It's about returning to a balance of living, mm-hmm. between men and women, because there are women, obviously, who are walking around today scared of men. There are probably as many men who are just as scared walking amongst women, because they have no way of knowing if they look at them the wrong way, their life is over. As we know it. So can you talk with us a little bit about that?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the thing is many times when a woman is scared of a man, it's because she is scared of She is scared of being harmed physically. Whereas in the scenario that you just talked about, the man is not afraid physically. He's afraid of his reputation and what he might lose. And when you have centuries and centuries and centuries of women not being heard when they have been abused, when they have been violated, and finally there is some attention to it. I mean, I think the way that we run is things swing this way and then they swing that way. we had like the swing for many, 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 many years. And now the swing is over here. And we are dealing with it, and we're just going to have to see where all this goes. And, you know, thinking about some reconciliation, perhaps, not to get too Catholic, but some reconciliation about how, you know, like when something's happened, how do you repair that? And we can do that individually, but I don't know how to do that as a society. And also I want to acknowledge that this wasn't only able-bodied women. This wasn't only the Selma Hayeks or the, you know, like the, she's the prettiest one I could think of right now, but there's so many who were impacted by this. And also she has dyslexia. So she's stuck out to me, but it just wasn't these people who we think every day, oh yes, of course they're being harassed. It is people in our everyday lives, and it's people and people, because it did happen to men too. Terry Crews, I believe his name is, talked about an incident that happened to him. But it's also women who have disabilities, because the rate of abuse in that population, of sexual assault in the population of women who have disabilities, is higher than most populations. And that is something that we need to look at too, that not a lot of people are looking at those other areas that Me Too might intersect with, because we really need to be talking about the physical and sexual abuse of women with disabilities that is almost always ignored, because people are like, oh, that doesn't happen. Who would do that? Well, apparently enough to impact 60% of a particular population. And I don't want to say any numbers because I'm dyslexic and I may get them wrong, but it's a major issue.
Yeah. I have trouble watching movies and television programs that are based in the past, especially in medieval times and so forth, because of the way in which women are treated. But what I find so fascinating, and I don't know about you, is when the stories start to come out, the true stories that start to come out of the contributions that women have made in our society to our society. And I think of the movie regarding the Apollo program, and they were trying to solve a certain problem, and it was a bunch of women who came, I think it was called Hidden Figures, but I can't recall if that's it. That's it. And I just sat there and I'm going, yeah, it's about time these stories started coming out. Where in the heck were these? And we get more and more of these. And I'm going, that's not the history I was taught, but I'm glad this is, you know, and you'd like to think that Hollywood, at least to some level, is being honest to history and to the contributions that women have made to our society in the different areas.
And the thing is, Hollywood, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. So I wouldn't trust them with all the stories, which is why it's so important that we have a do-it-yourself culture.
Yeah.
That I don't have to wait for WNBC or whatever the radio station is to contact me. I can go on podcasts and have a interview that isn't interrupted by, you know, crazy Larry who's trying to sell cars. Instead, it can be an honest conversation. I can say Pepsi sucks or whatever, and you're not going to shush me on that. And we now have the opportunity to embrace all aspects of ourselves and do it the way that we want to do it, whether it's in publishing, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's in podcasting, because we can harness that voice that mainstream media wasn't allowing on.
Well, now there is the downside to that, and that is that somebody can go on to a podcast, can go on to Facebook or Twitter or any of these other social media sites, and they can say whatever they want, leveling accusations left and right, making statements about historical events left and right. I am not a fan, for example, of the Confederacy, but I am not in favor of removing the statues or the flag because that is part of our history. We are where we are today because of that. It would be the same as you removing, pulling on a dark thread of your past. You will completely undo the tapestry of your life and you are no longer the person you are. We wouldn't be the country that we are today. And if we did remove that from our total historical record, who knows what we would have become if we had never gone down that road? Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I totally understand that. And the thing is that it hasn't been well balanced.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have that, but what about the other things that we can now have? And, you know, a lot of the statues to the Confederacy rose up around the time of integration. So it's kind of like trying to re-harness some of that.
Yeah.
So there's also a cultural context for when they came up.
Yeah.
And to counterbalance those in a way that acknowledges our complex history, which I think that is the problem in the U.S. is it's super complex, and we have not done a good job teaching our citizens about it.
Yeah, my understanding is that Germany, they have to today, they've got to face their past. They acknowledge the sins of the past. You know, and granted, maybe the individuals that are alive today had nothing to do with what happened during World War II and prior to that. But the reality is they're the ancestors, and that's part of their history, as awful as it is. As a matter of fact, I heard something to that effect. I heard something on a program once, and I didn't know this, that some of those concentration camps in Germany, they actually existed in the early 1930s. Now, I don't know if that was true or not. And then this goes to that other aspect of people being able to go on and say whatever they want. And that is getting
fact checking.
Yeah. And of course, then there are going to be those who are going to, regardless, there are people who are Holocaust deniers. And it's like, okay, so where did all these skulls come from? Where did all these bones come from? Where did all of this stuff come from? And what about this place over here and over here and over here that are physically right there? How do you explain that away? Those were there. And I have to say the one gaping criticism that I have of the Third Reich, which, by the way, I had to look up the word Reich. It just means realm. It's in English translation. It's the third realm. And no, we're not talking about a Lord of the Rings trilogy movie here. And then I found out what the first and second realms were. But the only thing that, in my opinion, the Third Reich did that was the biggest mistake they ever made was keeping copious records. I mean, they were meticulous about keeping records, which is, but then again, look what they did to millions and millions of people, not just 6 million Jews. There were millions of people. But again, it goes back to this issue of, as you said, fact checking.
And the Nazis, what they did, because disabled people were among some of the first people who they exterminated, and they would have lists of people, and they would put a minus if they were going to let them live and a plus if they were going to exterminate them. And there was a whole campaign to stigmatize disability and to make it that these were mercy killings.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of disability history that has gone untold, or it's not told in the mainstream. that really needs to be acknowledged so that we learn from those things.
Well, there was one disabled Viking who is an historical figure. His name was Ivor the Boneless. And he had no bones in his legs, and yet he lived. We've been watching the series Vikings on the History Channel. Fascinating program. Very, very vigorous fighters. They fought as if they had nothing to lose. And this Ivor, he came out of this one particular family, and he became the most ruthless. He should have died at birth. He should have died, or they should have left him out in the wilderness to be eaten by the wolves. And his father just couldn't do it. But he became the biggest tyrant. And she did some research on him. I think he lived into his 80s, which was unheard of.
Back then.
Yeah. But he had no bones in his legs. And so he dragged himself around. He had braces that he put his legs in so he could walk on crutches. And so it was, to me, that was fascinating to watch. Here's this disabled guy who should have been in a wheelchair. And boy, he was ruthless. I would take it that you're pretty ruthless with your comedy as well.
What I always say is that disabled people should have the same access to being assholes as everybody else. And I think he probably proved that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I know that I have been there as a legally blind person, and even I wear glasses to drive and which is great. But I've had my share of comeuppance. I've always found it interesting that if I get too big for my britches, the universe has this beautiful way of making me humble once again. So it's a very interesting,
right? Interesting
dichotomy. I'm sure you've had the same situation happen to you too.
Oh yeah. Especially whenever you're in comedy, you have the greatest show, you headline, and you know the next one is probably going to suck. You're going to be back at an open mic with brand new material, and you're going to get heckled. So, yes, I totally understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Nina G., I want to thank you so much for giving us this time here on the program to talk about your life, the work that you're doing, and the multiple causes, even though they may not be directly involved, that you are speaking to and addressing through the work that you're doing. And I applaud you for that. And I'm just curious, I have three final questions for you, but I have this one question I want to ask you before we get to that part. And that is, in that regard, if I were to sit here and applaud you with accolades of, oh, you're such an inspiration, you're such a hero, you're on, and I just, you know, gushing with all of these accolades, how does that make you feel? Do you really feel that way?
Well, I mean, I think my favorite inspirational thing that has been said to me is once a woman came up to me after I did a presentation. This wasn't comedy, just straight presentation. And she said, "You're such an inspiration. If I talked like you, I wouldn't talk at all." And I was like, not especially a compliment. Like, I don't know what would make you think that's a good thing to say.
Oh, Lord.
And then I have a joke about this, which is, and I need your help on this.
Okay.
How many disabled people does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I don't know. How many disabled people does it take to screw in a light bulb?
One to screw it in and five able-bodied people to say, "You are such an inspiration."
I love it. I love it. Well, I know you're up there in Oakland.
And that joke is because people are like, "Oh my God, you left the house. You're such an inspiration."
Yeah.
They don't go any deeper than that. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's an insult. Like that people have such low expectations.
Yeah.
And if we can look a little bit deeper, like if you buy my book and you read my book and you have the library order my book and you order 10,000 copies for everybody you know, and you look at my story and then you call me an inspiration, I'm cool with that because you've learned who I am.
Yeah.
But if like, oh, you opened up your mouth and you talked, not an inspiration.
Yeah,
not
exactly, great. Exactly. Well, we encourage people to get a copy of your book, or 10,000 copies, Stutterer Interrupted. I was thinking of a condition. It would be called Stutterer Interruptus, something like that.
And that is what able-bodied people would have. That is what fluent people would have because they say that we have the communication disorder, but it is other people who interrupt us that do.
That's
so
it.
I like that.
Stutterer Interruptus would be the opposite book of Stutterer Interrupted. And we thank you so much.
I love it.
What's your website so that people can go there, they can get more information, and they can laugh at you and the jokes you tell?
Laugh at the disabled at www.ninagcomedian.com. And you can also find my book at stutterinterrupted.com.
Uh-huh. There's also a great joke. Hire the disabled. They're fun to watch.
There you go. And that means you can have me at your corporation or your college, all of that.
That's right. Also, encourage you, if you want to come down from Oakland to Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be so much fun. If I am down there, you're the first call that I'm going
to
make.
Please, please. I'll make sure you've got my number. We'd love to do it. And I want to remind our listeners that you can go to her website, ninagcomedian.com, and find out more about her. See some of her stand-up. It's on YouTube as well. Get a copy of Stutterer Interrupted. And also a reminder of this program being on 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Sundays, 1 a.m. Monday mornings, streaming live at those times, as well as on all the podcast locations. SoundCloud is the primary one where we put all of these podcasts and programs for your listening enjoyment. And if you would like to pick up anything else along the way, like a copy of my book Choices, it's available for $9.99. We put the decimal point in, folks. I don't care what Jack did with his sandwich thing and left out the decimal. For $299, I wouldn't buy a hamburger from anybody for $299. It's available. Just to put in the subject line Choices, and we will work all the details out from there. And three final questions for you, Nina G. The first being, who is Nina G?
Who is Nina G? There's such a great line from The Jerk where they ask, who is Naven Johnson? And I wish I memorized that whole thing, but because of the dyslexia, I didn't memorize that. Otherwise, I would say the exact thing that Naven Johnson said in The Jerk. So with that, I am someone who loves comedy, and I'm someone who wants you to change the way that you think about disability.
Are you going to say that you were going to recite the line that went, my name's Nathan Johnson, and I was born a poor black child?
No, 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 no. This is after he gets famous. And he's all, who is Nathan R. Johnson?
Yes. He's in the phone book. I made it. I'm
with
somebody.
With the umbrella in the drink.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do remember.
He's somebody.
Of course, my favorite scene is, of course, when he and Bernadette Peters are breaking up and he's gathering up everything that he needs.
Yes.
That's a wonderful piece. Second question to you.
I'm going to this paddle ball in this chair. And
that's right. And
my
that's
dog.
All I need. And that's
I
all
need
I need.
My dog.
That's right. Second question is, what is it that you hope, we may never finish this interview, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I hope to talk to as many people as possible about disability, and I would love to talk to more women who stutter and to connect with them, because we're a very small group of people. I call us unicorns, because out of the 1% of people who stutter, 1 in 4 of us are women. And when I was a kid, I wanted a stuttering bestie girl so bad. And as an adult, I found a number of them, but it's always really great to connect with women who stutter.
Very cool. Final question. Who is, I already asked that one, didn't I? You got me all flustered. Okay, here it is. What is your life's purpose?
What is my life's purpose? Oh, you know, it's always good to end on an existential question. You know, in comedy, they say end on a dick joke. You end on an existential question. So thank you. I think my life's purpose, no matter what I'm doing, is to further the conversation of what it means to have a disability and what that looks like.
Well, very good. And I thank you so much for spending so much time with us here on the program. And I encourage people to go to your website and find out more. Give us that website one more time, please.
www.ninagcomedian.com and stutterinterrupted.com. And I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. So you can find me everywhere.
As we like to say about Elvis, Nina G is everywhere. She's everywhere. And we thank you for being here. Which is
and she just left the building.
And she's just
the other Elvis.
She's just left the building. She left several times trying to get the door open, and the doorknob kept slipping out of her hand. There, we hope that you folks will pick up a copy of the book. Nina G, thank you so much again for joining us. We do look forward to talking with you again and catching up with the work that you're doing. We encourage people to laugh with you and have a good time, because man, life is just too short. I look at my almost 60 years. It's like, wait a minute. And I, you know, that thing I read from my friend Dana, we were kids. We grew up next door to one another as kids. And it's like, I can look back and go, that was just yesterday. And I've got another lifetime to go. I've got another 40 years. I have another 40 years, dear. So there you go. Thank you so much for joining us. I thank you for listening.
This is lots of fun. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Stay on the line for us as we continue wrapping up the program. And we encourage you to listen to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And until next time, love to Lal.